What is happening? Welcome to another edition of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollack. This pitching podcast is regular on Wednesdays, has a guest every time. And as we get into the season, I thought to myself, well, okay, there are all these young pitchers we're all so excited about. I'm watching this guy. One hasn't even gone yet until tonight, which is Landon Ropp. And we're not going to talk about him because I don't know. I hope he's great. But I want to talk about all the ones we've seen already, and who better to do so with Eno Saris of The Athletic. My gosh, Eno, thanks so much for picking up the phone and calling me back. And
what
as I request
surprise.
You for this guest spot.
Good to see you again, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to see you. I believe you just published an exciting article today.
Yeah, it's about the kick change. And the first time I heard about the kick change was I was talking to Logan Webb about grips, because I was talking to Logan Webb about his cutter, which he did throw a lot of in his start yesterday, I believe.
Yeah,
he was
15% changeups.
Yeah, I thought he was good. I thought
he was great.
I thought, you know, I think that Houston lineup may be scuffling a little bit, but, you know, Webb could win the Cy Young this year because, mm-hmm. you know, he's always gotten close, and all he needs is a few more strikeouts, and, you know, the cutter could help him to that. Anyway, he was like, oh, you're the grips guy. Yeah. You got to go talk to Hayden. He's got a funky ass grip. And
hey, no cursing. Come on, Eno.
He called it a three finger. He called it like a pitchfork. He thought it was like, he's got a three finger. He's got like a three finger pitchfork change. So I go over there and, you know, instead what he's got is,
a pitchfork, but it was just hilarious. I'm surprised I haven't even thought about that. Like a fork ball is a pitchfork. Why have I never thought of that before? But
the three, if you teach kids, like the more kids you teach, the more like they just do a three finger because they can't really.
Sure. Right. Anything, yes.
You know?
Yep.
So I don't, you know, everyone has a slightly different, like Jack Leiter throws a kick change and he throws a four seam.
Right.
But most of the guys throw a two seam and they do that.
Okay. So what Eno's doing right now is he's pulling back his his middle finger. So he's doing a circle change essentially with the index finger and the thumb. And then it's a middle finger and ring finger on the top side, kind of making the Y of the two-seamer grip, and then pulling back the middle finger so that it is down the seam on the left side. And it's kind of making it look like
the middle finger. It's like it looks a little bit like a knuckle curve. People call it a knuckle. Some people call it a knuckle change. You're not really putting your knuckle on it. But by taking this finger off, what it does is people who are dominant two-finger,
and
supinators, slider guys, Hayden Birdsong, Davis Martin, a lot of guys who throw a lot of breaking balls. You know, you can take the index finger off by doing the circle. You know, that's part of it. But if you are like a supinator and a slider dominant guy, you'll still be dominant with your middle finger then.
Right.
So what you then do is you kickstand this middle finger so that it's ineffective. And in fact, this isn't in the story, but it's kind of interesting to heads, which is that Tread, they think that Sean Anderson, the first guy who ever threw it, may have had an undiagnosed nerve irritation or injury, and that had caused his finger to crawl back.
No.
And that's why he threw his changeup like that, was that he basically had like a club finger a little bit,
it
was nerve irritation that had like pulled his finger back. But in any case, Sean Anderson like threw a couple with these and they were like, what is that? And then they captured it. And with, you know, because we have modern technology, they were able to say, this is the spin axis, this is what it's doing. Mm-hmm. And they were like, this is who it's good for. So now you have a pitch that's, you know, I wrote about like, how do you define a new pitch? When does a new pitch become a new pitch? When do we start to he throws a kick change as opposed to what's a kick change? You know, so like, when does a pitch like kind of, Splinker did this recently. Sweeper is the one that made it all the way onto StatCast, you know. Splinker may be the next to go to StatCast. What if, you know, what does it take to get kick change on StatCast? And you know, I just talked about like, movement profile. Here's the movement profile. Here are the types of pitchers that throw it. One thing that's different about the kick change versus the splinker and the sweeper is if someone has a splinker, they may have a splitter or a sinker as well. And if someone has a sweeper, they may have a gyro slider or a slurve or some other breaking ball that's crossed out as a slider. So it's more important for them to necessarily be split out.
Sure.
So that you can be like, especially to the catcher, you know, like you don't want to throw the splinker when the catcher's accepting, you know, expecting the sinker or the splitter, you know. So like the thing that's different about the kick change is nobody yet, at least, is throwing a kick change and a regular change.
Right.
I mean, we'll look at Seth Lugo or whoever it is, you know, whoever the Jarvis, Seth Lugo of changeup guys is. You know, maybe Michael Walker would be like, well, actually, now I throw three changeups.
Right, might
like,
as well.
Damn, now we gotta put a kick change in there. But so it's just about the sort of the philosophy of like when a pitch becomes a pitch, but also educating people about this new pitch. And I mean, that was August 2024 was the first I heard about the kick change. And Hayden Birdsong by the estimation of Tread, where this has been a real nexus. Tread Athletics has been a real sort of
a petri dish for this stuff. Yeah,
petri dish. Yeah, that's better. They have really spread this. They think that Hayden Birdsong was the first person to throw it in a major league game. So, you know, because of modern technology and also just because I guess it's my beat grips or whatever, you know, we were able to discover this new pitch, you know, 3 months into its existence. And now there's like 15 pitchers throwing it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Gliders throwing it. Landon Knack, his changeup that we saw in Japan was a kick change. Birdsong, Martin. There's a whole list of guys that I put in the piece.
Clay Holmes.
Clay Holmes's changeup is a kick change. Yeah. So,
and I think
it's a fun thing to watch. What it does is because that finger is up, it instead of like your normal spin axis, which like if you're a slider guy or all like this, it just kicks off of that.
Yeah,
and you don't impart spin because the two fingers that are imparting spin on the ball are now taken off the ball.
Right.
So it really kills the spin and it sort of kicks it into a different axis than all the rest of your pitches.
Nice. What is the movement profile different from, say, a normal circle change? What have you seen there?
It is so tie-ons is a little bit more horizontal than the rest of them. The especially if you take tie-on out, it is more akin to a splitter than it is to a regular change, especially a power change. So it's more down than sideways. And
that's
so
great.
It theoretically could be more platoon neutral. So if you were righty throwing a kick change, you could maybe even throw these to righties. And it's harder. The average kick change is right now in baseball is 90 miles an hour, 89.6.
Oh my gosh. You want me... I'm going to tell you the thing I hate the most about the kick change. You know what I'm going to say.
No, I have no idea. I love that you already have something you hate about it, though.
Well, that's it's not what you think. We already have a designation for KC, and that's knuckle curve.
Oh, yeah. It can't be KC.
So what, KIC? Like,
Well, it doesn't have to actually be that related. I mean, ST is the one for sweeper.
Gosh. You know the whole story why I told you this, right?
Yes.
It's because it was for Slutter, which is really power slider, guys. And they had that in the system. Oh, man. They're like, let's just use ST. That's already here.
Oh, you know that they just used the. So apparently there was a slow curve designation they had for a while.
Oh, right. They'll just use SC.
So it's SC for kick change. Who knows why?
it's
in the system.
It's stick change.
Right. Yeah.
No, they'll just use SW. You should have done for sweeper. Oh, God.
We're laughing because their job is hard. I mean, that was one of the things, too, is like, you know, on record, I was, you know, behind the scenes, I understand that, like, it's a lot of work to make a new pitch type and to like, because all this, they're broadcast partners. It comes out to everybody. Oh, it has to be really dialed in what it is. They have to tell broadcasters what it is. They have to have a back pitcher all has to write his kick change piece, you know, so that they can give that to the broadcaster.
And Cyber Saver actually This is what I was thinking. I'm glad that you mentioned it inside the comments. So the real answer here, guys, is change kick. So like fastball split or something is what splitter is, FS. So CK.
Oh, there you go. Right. CK. That's
yeah,
that's
fine. Whatever. I do want to actually ask, though, does Shane Smith throw a kick change?
He was. Oh, I think he's actually on my list. Let me look.
I gave you a list today because really the topic right now is the young starting pitchers that we have seen in week one. And there are a lot of them. I've gotten so many questions about this guy, that guy. And it's all this really interesting moment of you want to have your hand in as many pots. You want to try and not miss the big breakout of the year. And it's hard to tell which one is that guy. And
I don't have Shane Smith on here, but Davis Martin is there. And Brian Bannister is his like director of pitching. And Brian Bannister got it from Hidden Birdsong, and Shane Smith is now with them.
Did you see Shane Smith pitch last night?
I did not.
I'm just going to stall for a second.
I've seen him pitch before. It's a lot of velo.
No. I'm just going to stall for a second. You need to see one pitch.
Okay.
Okay. It's Carlos Correa strikeout pitch, first inning. And it is the fourth pitch of the at bat.
What pitch type is it?
Oh, it's changeup. I think it's the filthiest pitch I've seen the entire season.
He swung and missed?
Oh, yes. Yeah. okay. Absolutely. But the guys that I have on my list right now, I don't know if we're going to get to all of them, but the ones that we are going to talk about, and you're going to hear, you know, his reaction as he sees this. Shane Smith, Jordan Hicks, Richard Fitz, Max Meyer, Drew Rasmussen, Dustin May, Jackson Jobe, Casey Mize, Chris Paddock, Chris Bubich, Tyler McGill, Shane.
Oh,
Bond,
Jesus Brandon Christ. What was that? I bet you that is a kick change.
That was so perfect.
Oh, it is, because not that sideways. It's straight down.
Oh, gosh.
92. That's it.
I was waiting for it.
Dude, that's a kick change, dude.
Yeah,
92.
Right? That's what I thought. Okay.
Because power changeups, a lot of the power changeups are more like Greinke's that have sideways.
Right. Right.
Yeah. This is a power down changeup.
I did a breakdown. You guys haven't seen it yet. Just go to the Pitcherless channel on YouTube. I did a thing on Shane Smith this morning.
Filthy.
It's unbelievable. It is nuts. And
that might change what I think about Shane Smith.
I thought it was just like 96 miles per hour and like, oh, we'll see how the secondaries come along. Like that. Oh, okay. And the slider is like a solid, but not really amazing one. But if you have that fastball changeup going, that's fine. You just need the bridge slider really at that point. So I'm curious about him. I just hope he doesn't get fatigued too much in games. He slowed down a bit by like the fourth inning, fifth inning, 60 pitches or so. He was at 93, 94 instead of 96, 97. So we're going to see that over time develop, but man, that first inning was, I didn't know, you know, and now you didn't either. And we clearly heard that reaction.
Stuff doesn't really like the slider, but it's 89 miles an hour. So, and it looks like it's pretty much a 0-0. So,
right.
That's like almost like it's going to function almost as a cutter. It's just going to be another hard pitch he throws off of the fastball, basically.
That works. He just needs as a bridge pitch. It wasn't a high strike rate yesterday. I was actually surprised when I saw the data after watching it. It was 47% strikes as opposed to like 60. But I think it's tight enough, especially in that first inning, that he should be able to get that for more strikes in the future. But just to finish the list before I got interrupted by someone, I don't know who. Jeez. Tyler McGill, Shane Boz, Grant Holmes, AJ Smith-Shaver, and then, of course, Jack Leiter / Kumar Rocker. Those are the guys that I have on my list of those young ones I'm sure that you all are really curious about. And just to put the pin on Shane Smith specifically, I'm not doing it right away because I think he needs to get stretched out further for this to be more consistent. However, if you need to make a pickup through the year, I do think that Shane Smith is not leaving this rotation and is going to get better as the year goes on when he's able to hold that velocity throughout 85, 90 pitches.
And if it's a question of innings, like the nice thing about this is that they won't play a lot of games with him early to have, you know, innings from him late.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Like
right.
The worst case scenario with Shane Smith is that they crochet him at the end of the year, which would suck, but you would see it coming a mile away. I mean, he would have to do one three-inning start in September for you to be like, okay, that was enough of Shane Smith. Thank you.
Yeah, right. Move on.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, we're getting this for the price of free. So I think a lot of times I hear pushback. Oh yeah, he's gonna be good until he gets injured. I'm like, great, cool. I'll just get rid of him then. I don't.
Right. Okay. Yeah, right.
Whatever. That's I'm not yeah. spending all this stuff on.
Not
it,
so. Like, oh, your guys won't get injured.
Yeah, right. There's that too. Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh. Reynaldo Lopez news was very unfortunate.
And we don't even know how bad it is yet. Like, it's,
yeah.
They're like, we're doing a shoulder surgery, and then we'll tell you how bad it was afterwards.
But part of that, though, is the conversation of, hey, who gets removed when Strider shows up? Well, okay, there you go. So Grant Holmes and AJ Smith-Shaver, they look like they're here to stay now for a long time. I'm kind of curious to hear your quick thoughts on both of those guys. We'll start with Grant Holmes. Didn't do well against the Dodgers. I sat him in two leagues. I'm encouraged by him moving forward. Are you changing your tone at all with him?
No, I do. He does illustrate a funky thing that is happening with Stuff Plus that I just want to get out on the airwaves, just so people know this. It's like we made 100 on the pitcher level equal the average pitcher this year, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about the way the beginning of the season works, especially the first two or three days of the season, you know, you only have good pitchers going.
Right.
And so you kind of almost need to wait for like the full rotations to go through once or twice to like be like, okay, now we know what the average pitcher is. So Grant Holmes is, you know, Stuff Plus looked better at one point than it does now, but it's settled into exactly where he used to be, which is not great fastballs, good breaking balls, and in that start, not great command. But against the Dodgers, you know, this is a funky thing that also happens is good hitters inspire bad locations.
Yes.
You don't want to like, you're not like pinpointing Shohei Ohtani. You're trying to dance far outside of his,
right.
of his comfort.
They lower their confidence is what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I would expect him to bounce back to sort of a 95 Stuff Plus, like 105 location plus, and be usable in 75% of his starts. The only reason I might take Smith-Shaver is that I do think the top end talent, like the top end upside, is better. Mm. The fastball is obviously better for Shaver. And if you watch that game, the splitter is pretty, pretty
well. Nasty. That was the interesting thing about Smith-Shaver. And just to finish Holmes, like I have him on multiple teams. I benched him for this one. I didn't want this. And I feel good about what he does, especially with 90 really plus pitches usable. In his last spring start. So
he's really usable. Like I whatever his next start is, I'd probably throw.
Yeah, him. Miami, buddy.
Yeah, there you go.
So with Smith-Shaver, so I'm conflicted because I think one of the biggest pitfalls of running 12 team leagues is when you get too committed into a guy's ceiling and upside that you hold on to them for too long
through too many bad starts.
Exactly, and the biggest cause for that. Is
like nasty stuff.
Poor execution, awesome stuff.
Pitching ninja gifs and stuff.
Right? You. Yeah. Oh, no.
You.
We say gifs. We are officially Pitcher Gifts Inc. So it's a contract. Okay. It's in the contract. You know, no. With AJ Smith-Shaver, he did not command his fastball well. He did get much better marks on it than I saw last year. And it looks great in that fashion. It's just that the splitter was the only reliable pitch. And that's weird to me. I don't love relying on AJ Smith-Shaver for that.
The other thing that
I think
it
might take some time for him to get comfortable for us to feel like he's a regular guy in a 12 teamer, but I can't say to you, oh, cool, May 15th, AJ Smith-Shaver is going to be amazing. This could be something he just battles all year.
Yeah, I would say, I guess what my caveat is that like in dynasty leagues or keeper leagues, if it's a 12 teamer, I'd just try to hold him a little longer.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Because Holmes is more like of a usable, you know, high floor veteran, whereas Smith-Shaver is of the two is the guy that next year could be a top 25 pick, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. He had Smith-Shaver's fastball locations, and I was like, no, don't throw that down and in fastball. That's terrible. That's not going to work. Bam, home run on Oscar Hernandez. Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, but it could have been. I mean, it could have been the opponent, too. You know, like, what?
Yeah, I mean, when I was just like, oh, don't throw that.
The other thing that's weird about Smith-Shaver, though, is he throws a curveball that, like, looks really pretty.
Yeah, it's not.
Has a 12 inches of, you know, vertical break, 8 inches of horizontal, 78 miles an hour. There's a little bit of red there on the vertical drop on Savant. So like, I think that people like think that the curveball is like really good. I don't know. Stuff Plus says it's not. And if you, even if you look at Savant, you look at the movement profile versus average, because that's what they have, that little like gun thing where you see it. It's right in the middle of average. It's it's pretty much an average curveball, it's below average by velo. Like by the if you're throwing at 77, you know, like, right now. I mean, it's crazy. This the way the velo's gone. 77 used to be average for curveball, but now 80.
Yeah, no, now it's now you want to be like 81 to 83. And yeah. I also want to mention quickly, Sandy Alcantara yesterday. Obviously, not exciting to see 96, 97 is or like really 95, 96. And also afterwards say that he's not recovering as quickly as he wants to, which is just, oh, cool. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. What was interesting, I will say, is that he threw this 86 mile per hour, 86 to like 88, 89 mile per hour breaking ball that was classified as a curve the entire time, but didn't throw a single slider and has 0-0 movement. And I'm thinking, this is probably just the slider. Just that said, I kind of dig that.
That should be a good pitch for him. Yeah.
Like, I want that slower. And I know that sounds weird, but when Alcantara had everything above 90, it does prime guys a little bit better. And it's more about prep for the fastball and then just make enough movement of the bat to adjust for the 92 changeup. But if you're throwing the 86 curve, it takes more than that. You actually need to really time differently all of a sudden. And I think that's important. So
there's that BP research about the bigger the band, I think it might actually be driveline, the bigger the difference in velo and shape from, you know, the rest of your, like, you know, the rest of your pitches, the more you get takes. So, and that in his case, takes could be good because takes could get him some strikes as opposed to balls in play, which he does, you know, sometimes give up too many balls in play.
That's interesting. I wonder if that data is still the same if you remove like lollipop OO curveballs.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, we know that we know like guys like,
but I think it's, I think it's probably a lot of velo stuff because I think one of the easiest things to see early on, and I think it's really hard to be a batter. So I'm not saying any of this is easy, but like, I think probably one of the easiest things to see is just like, as it comes out of the hand, is it really hard or is it soft? Like on the court, on the order of like, if there's a 15 mile an hour difference, I bet you can see a 15 mile an hour difference.
Yeah.
Now, that's why I think sliders are so good. If you have like a 4 mile an hour difference, I bet you that's really hard to see. And so you think, oh, that's hard. That's a fastball.
And then especially with the extension too, if you have that, and that's even just shorter tunnel, you know, to the it's just amazing. Oh.
I was happy to see him go five, get a win.
Yeah.
I'm still pretty happy about Sandy Alcantara.
So, okay, I'm going to bring this back because we have so many names here we got to go through. We're going to talk about all of them. We're going to start I'll start with his teammate Max Meyer, but before we do, we have to take a quick break. So we got to look at Max Meyer over the weekend, and it was that amazing 92 mile per hour slider. The fastball was at 96. In my view, I just kind of saw the same Max Meyer, but just like level up each of the pitches, which doesn't mean it's a brand new, oh my gosh, it's a four seam or sinker, changeup, slider. They're all amazing kind of guy. It's more of my slider is my best pitch, and hopefully now the other ones are good enough to supplement it with this new sweeper as well than it was last year, which has me not really like inside the top 40 or so. But I still think this is a solid, you know, play throughout the year. Do you have a different take, or is that kind of how you see Max Meyer too?
No, I mean, I alluded to this during the spring, which is like his spring strikeout rate was just basically the same as his regular strikeout rate. So I was like, I think this will, you'll be slightly better. Also, you know, we didn't have a huge sample from him before in terms of 63 innings. So, to some extent he could have just been unlucky on, especially because it was all homers, you know, what he'd done before was decent enough to be a major league starting pitcher, except for giving up, you know, 3 homers per 9. Mm-hmm. So, homers are the biggest source of noise. He pitches in Miami. He shouldn't be giving up that many homers. So even if you just took what Max Meyer was before and gave him average luck, I think he would be a usable pitcher this year. I do agree. And then he goes out and throws 50% slider. So he's very much like he used to be. He's a slider first guy. that's trying to arrange the pieces around his slider. But the pieces are all a little bit better. He did strike out 30% of the batters he saw in that thing. So I think if I'm creating like two buckets, one is the like super exciting don't forget about him bucket, and one is the what do I do next week bucket. Max Meyer fits in the what do I do next week bucket. I would slot him maybe slightly ahead of Grant Holmes because his fastballs are better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have so far Max Meyer ahead of Grant Holmes in that bucket. In the other bucket, I would have Shane Smith maybe behind AJ Shaver in the upside bucket.
Yeah. I think I believe a little bit more in the consistency of the command of Shane Smith than AJ Smith Shaver. So I'm going to lean slightly there, but I'm going to actually, it's funny because Shane Smith and Max Meyer both are on a low win team, while they have Grant Holmes and AJ Smith Shaver with a much higher win chance. So yeah, keep that in mind too. I think Grant Holmes at least has a safer floor with what should be two really good secondaries in his curve and his slider getting a ton of whiffs. Both pitches had over a 20% swing strike rate last year. Generally has very good command. It's not like he's throwing soft with that fastball. It's just not that good of a shape and everything. But I like to believe that Grant Holmes does enough here to continue the solid strikeout rate and get more wins than Max Meyer. So I'm going to slightly favor him. But yeah, it's all very close. And honestly, I want to recommend everybody to not play the yo-yo game, which is you have a guy and then he makes a start. Cool. You see one guy make a start and you go, oh, okay, I want him. Then you drop your guy who's going to make the start before the one you picked up. So then you don't get a start.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Right? And then like there's someone else that you like more than what you just picked up. So you go pick up that. But then you literally go 10 days without a single start.
Like, yeah, just, if you're not in the keeper league and you're deciding between Meyer and Holmes and they're both like somewhat available,
yeah,
then it's all about their next start.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And Grant Holmes again, Miami. I think
there's a name on this list that I think does not belong on this list at all.
Okay, hold on. Oh, yeah, right. That's Chris Paddock, of course. And it's got to be.
No, in the other direction.
Oh, on the other side. Well, they drew Rasmussen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this was really a list of like, we finally got a look at them.
Uh-huh.
And Drew Rasmussen, I kind of want to put like top 30 right now.
Yeah. No, he looks so good. Yeah. I mean, I guess so that Velo 95.5 is off his peak, but I'd rather have him make it through the season at 95.5. And oh, by the way, he was 95.7 in 2022 when he threw 146 innings of a 2.84 ball.
That's the thing. He looks like that guy with like a 107 whip right now because that cutter is the money pitch at 91 miles per hour. He just throws over the zone. No one can hit it.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to hit. It's great.
Yeah, he's hope for every like sort of three breaking ball guy out there.
Mm.
You know, where he's even stepped off of the slider a little bit. I wonder if that's, you know, TJ related. Sometimes you don't throw it in recovery from TJ, but he still has an 83 mile an hour curveball. And these are three legitimately different breaking balls, you know, as I see it.
Yeah, sweeper, slider, curve. Yeah.
Yeah, and so he's playing off of the two fastball thing or three fastball thing, depending on how you classify that cutter. So,
and
I think he's doing everything right.
You know, and on that same topic, it's we gave a lot of dings to the Rays entering this season, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, they're moving from the Trop to George Steinbrenner Field.
They're always hurt,
and the AL East is tough, and it's going to be rainouts and all whatever. But here comes Shane Baz with 10 strikeouts on Tuesday night. Drew Rasmussen looks like an absolute stud. Ryan Pepiot, I don't know how today's game is continuing to fare, but his first game against the Rockies, he just looked brilliant. Right. And Taj Bradley, honestly, is locating his cutter down in a way, which is pretty cool, which he kind of learned a bit last year. I didn't know if it would stick around. It did, at least in his first start. Zach Littell would. But then it's kind of interesting of like, I think this Rays staff entering the year. Obviously the Rockies and Pirates might be a part of that, but they're looking really good right now. I'm not really that concerned about George Steinbrenner Field at the moment.
Yeah. I'm not as worried about it. It turns out that their fascination with Stuff Plus and their, you know, pitching development pipeline was not just a park-aided thing. even though they do, they have had some, you know, some strikeout problems. Maybe it's a little bit more akin to like the Mariners, right? Mm-hmm. Where they're, you know, they're still good. They're good pitchers. You want them all. Not Emerson Hancock, but you want all of them, but you might be careful with some of them, you know, in matchups away from home until we sort of see what those splits look like. The nice thing for Boz, I think, is that he's just healthier, like, is the kind of feeling I got. Plus, I think this is what is so hard about becoming a pitcher. So a starting pitcher in the league. So like, think about Max Meyer, you come up and you're in the minor leagues and they're like, change up. You have to have a change up. You don't have a change up. Why don't you have a change up? Right. And so you're like, okay, I'm trying. Here's the change up. It's so good. Look at my change up, you know? And then you get to big leagues and they're like, you know, you're going to throw that change up, right? And you're like, yeah, I'm going to throw the change up.
Oh my God.
And then you're like, you know what? My best pitch is my slider. It's always been my best pitch. So over time, eventually the team's like, hey, you know what? Your best pitch is your slider. You should just throw that. And you're like, I've been saying.
Right.
So now we get the third version of X Meyer, and he's like, hey, what about 50% sliders? Here we go. You know?
Right.
And I feel the same way about Boz a little bit. I think you can see it in his selection process where, you know, he threw the curveball like sort of 20% of the time last year, and it was part of a, like, he was trying to do an even mix. I get it. You have your pitches.
It was a transition, though, right? He didn't have a slider after TJ didn't have all the sticky stuff. And, like, by, I think, like, the last six starts, he really kind of shelved the slider and then went heavy on the curve, which was successful for him. And that's really what we're continuing to see now. That curve looks great.
The spin is up on the curve. Mm. The movement is better on the curve. He's getting, you know, like an inch more drop on it. A little bit more sideways, so it's spinning hard. It's harder in velo, and maybe just an 84 mile an hour curveball is just intrinsically better than like a 86.5 slider that has just 0-0 movement. I mean, 0-0 movement, like a gyro slider, you kind of want that to be 89-90 these days for it to be plus. You know, like an 87 mile an hour 0-0 is like, he can use that. He'll use it almost as like a cutter, I believe. Like, he'll just use it to play bridge pitch to get through, to turn the lineup over. Maybe the second, third times he'll through. But like, he's found his core. His core identity is four seam curve.
Yeah,
and I think it looks pretty locked in. I think Boz and Rasmussen are on this list are my favorites. They seem to rise above in a way that. You know, and Boz is on the top of the upside list too. So, you know, Rasmussen's probably not on top of the dynasty list if we're making two lists because you just worry. He's almost three surgeries in, or I don't even know.
But man, he looked so good. I do want to get, so I have Casey Mize and Chris Paddock also here. And Mize is obviously, I think, more of an interesting conversation. With Paddock, I just want to let everybody know, velocity was a little bit down. He did not have a good slider. He threw so many of them against right-handers, and he got a lot of right-handers and tried to lean on it, and it just didn't do enough. And lefties, he's never been a good slider guy.
He should probably just give up on the slider at some point.
I know. He didn't throw the split change as much against right-handers. He probably should have. And he did well against lefties. So I'm curious to see what happens next time. But yeah, we are not going to chase Paddock. At this point, at least I'm not. I didn't know if you had any other different take there on Paddock.
No, I'd been really excited because he'd, like, there was a start in spring where he was like sitting 96 into the fourth.
Yeah, right.
And at 93, I know Stuff Plus says that the fastball is decent and the change is decent, and that could be a foundation along with an average curve. Like, there is still a pitcher that can work in here.
Yeah, that's Paddock. It's what he's been. And we were hoping to see more, and it's just, we're not going to chase that. And we want to see something co-host different.
Derek Van Riper on Rates and Barrels is a never Paddock, so.
I'm a never Trevor.
I hear him in the back of my head, so. I'll put Paddock in the, you know, usable what's your next start bucket. Mm-hmm. I think he's unfortunately out of the kind of dynasty upside bucket. In the usable group, he's still last. But, you know, you can watch his next start. You can watch, see what the schedule says after that. And honestly, I think he could rise above. I'm not a big that big on Chris Bubich. And I think he could rise above. I think Richard Fitt's fastballs aren't good. And so I think he could rise above some of the bottom guys on here, but for very right now, he's probably the bottom name that we're going to talk about.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I even debated not doing it, but it's because of, Casey Mize also being a part of it. And I attribute the same similarly because they're both trying to do high four seamers, 7 feet of extension and, 18 inches of vert with a splitter slash split change and trying to figure out the slider. And with Paddock, he had a velocity drop, and with Mize, he had a 2-tick velocity drop. Instead of sitting 96, like he did a lot in the spring, it was 94, without really anything to latch onto that I wanted to see, with the slider and some good splitters. I remember actually watching it.
And the sweeper is way too close. Like he said, he had three sliders in the spring, and I'm looking at his slider chart right now, and it doesn't. It's not have a lot of separation. It looks like a big mess.
So the thing with Mize, if you guys don't know, listening right now, Eno joined last week for a brief moment. I'm sure at some point I'm randomly just going to see you on it. But playback.tv/pitcher list. Every time a baseball game is on, we are streaming it with our community. And last night, I had a moment. I went to see what game was on that we were putting on at the moment. And what do you know? Casey Mize had a kind of fun first inning against Seattle. Like, oh, look at that splitter. Looks good. Looks all right. Game. Yeah, an okay start.
Harder splitter. 89 mile an hour splitter now. Oh, Yankees next.
It's the Yankees next. And I see that drop in velocity. And I don't really see anything. Like, last year wasn't fun for Casey Mize. I don't see enough to say, like, oh, no, this is different. We've got something brand new. It's okay. It's going to be fine. Especially with that lower velocity, and now he goes against the Yankees. Like, I don't want to touch this in my 12 teamers. I streamed him for this one, and I've already moved on from Casey Mize because you don't want to have someone for 10 days just on your bench here that you don't even know if it's going to be good in 10 days.
He did say something interesting I want to bring up here.
Yeah.
There's a piece with Cody Stavenhagen about how he reclaimed his splitter and found himself. And he talks a little bit about, you know, who he's like looking for to be like, oh, I could be like him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about the splitter, and he says, like, he used to watch Gossman, right? And this is something that's come up with when we talked about Mize. But instead of thinking about Gossman now, he's thinking about somebody else. Where is it?
Eovaldi. Oh man, well, Eovaldi's throwing curveballs now all of a sudden for whiffs, and it's like, whoa, this is so cool.
So, but he was saying that Eovaldi's splitter is more of a power pitch.
Yeah, it is.
You know, because Gossman's has a big velo gap off of the fastball, and so I think that's probably a good idea for him in terms of like who he should model himself after. But one of the things that Eovaldi really impressed us with was he came up with this big fastball, but he had an aptitude for adding pitches.
Right. He had the cutter, the splitter in there as well.
Although he doesn't, slider, he's not a great spin guy, right?
Eovaldi. Right. No, but he's always adding these little extra elements to give something different.
And so that would be my hope for Mize, because this year he is throwing at least the slider and the sweeper, the split finger hard, and the four seam and sinker. So he's become a little bit closer to a five pitch guy.
Yeah.
And the hard splitter looks like it is better by the model and by results than the slower splitter. So I like him a little bit. I'm going to put him in our buckets. I'll put him behind Holmes and Meyer and Rasmussen and Boz on the usable chart.
Mm-hmm.
And probably similar spot in the dynasty, but ahead of Paddock and ahead of some other names we haven't yet.
Just forget Paddock, guys. Just like he's not here.
Here's a nice thing I can say. If I just sort the list of the players that we're talking about by stuff plus on the four seam, I get a guy we haven't talked about yet that I'm super excited about, that I have been super excited about, and we talked about on this podcast a million times.
Oh yeah, I know. I put him here just for you.
Drew Rasmussen, Dustin May, Jackson Jobe, Casey Mize. So he has the fifth best four seam faster on this list.
So there are a lot more we need to talk about. We don't have too much time. but I do want to say at least that Mize needs to get the cutter. The cutter was really the big opening thing for Eovaldi. He was struggling for a bit trying to figure out and find his way. And it wasn't really until Eovaldi added the cutter, I believe with the Red Sox in 2019, that he actually started to see the light a bit. And then it's starting to click with it and actually getting that off of the four seamer and then also having the splitter and then everything. Now we have the curve that's working. So it's been a process.
But if Mize has the four seam and the splitter as like a core identity,
it's possible. No, he adds it. That's what I'd be looking for.
Yeah.
For Mize to try and follow that Eovaldi model.
Yeah.
I do want to bring up, your favorite, really quickly. I'm going to do that. You guys, think in your head. Who is this guy that we're saying is, you know, Saris is? I got it, you know. by the way, guys, if you didn't know, I have been mispronouncing Eno's name, Saris, for so long. I didn't know I was saying it wrong. I would have assumed that Eno, like if he says Polak, I'd be like, it's Pollock, and that would be done. But... no, he doesn't tell me. Then I talked to him every day. I'm like, is it Saris? He goes, yeah, you've been mispronouncing my name the entire time. Friends tell each other things. Unbelievable. You know, Saris. All right. You know, Saris as a guy.
Radio stations all the time. They say my name.
I know, but I'm not those guys.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
It's different. All right. Now, think about the guy that, you know, Saris loves. And who you know it's going to be when we come back from this ad break. And we'll talk to you in just a moment. All right, Eno, it's Tyler McGill. And this was the best game I've seen from Tyler McGill
since that
opening day start where he stubbed in for Jacob DeGrom. I'm not kidding. This was amazing. 96 there were two things.
Fastball, 18 IVB. That's like one of his best IVBs.
The four-seamer was innately better, but its location was insane. He actually commanded it better than any of the spring starts, better than I've seen him in ages. But not just that, he also commanded a new gyro slider, like incredibly well, underneath it, arm side, all the way down, and had a sinker to do this too. Like, if you are like this now, Tyler McGill, you are top 40. You are like, that is legit. It's just, are you? You haven't had a history of being able to execute this before. Is that gyro slider not only sticking around, but also having the same strike rate and command? It was just such a good outing that I'm kind of getting like whiplash of disbelief. So, I mean, you pick him up and you just see if this is real. But do you think this is a real thing? Do you think like Tyler McGill has slowly and steadily put the bricks together and bam, this is who he's going to be now.
Yeah, the only thing that makes me worried is that if you look at his past fastball velos, he's erratic.
Yes, he's
had times. But the one thing that I like is that with 18 IVB, 18 inches of vertical movement on his fastball, like he may be a little bit more resilient to losing some velo. Like in the past, he's had a real dead zone fastball. And so you're like, oh, I like him at 96. I don't really like him at 93, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's been both things. And this is 96, but with the good shape, where maybe if he drops down to 95, 94, he'll still be a good pitcher.
Keep in mind that 93 for McGill isn't 93 for most because he does a 7.4 feet of extension. So the effective velocity still goes up, I think, over that hump that you were talking about. And if he's looking it up, we see this all the time. Guys with really good extension who can locate four seamers high, Bailey Ober, they get away with it if they have something underneath it. And this slider is finally that. That's the real thing. I'm just, am I allowed to be happy? Can I celebrate? You know, that's how I feel at the moment with this. So I think we're on the same page of he should be in that bucket with your Max Meyer and your Boz. Like he's right underneath Boz, really. It's just,
I don't know.
He's able to do this, he might be higher than Boz.
I think he could be higher than Boz because it's just the excellence across the spectrum in terms of, you know, Boz's fastball curveball and like putting the pieces together around that. Whereas McGill might be two fastballs, gyro slider, and then the changeup looks like very usable. So it's a slightly bigger arsenal, which doesn't surprise me too much coming from the Mets. They really emphasize the large.
They also size get the guys that already have them. Like, oh, Quintana, come on in.
I think McGill's near the top of both of my lists. I think that, you know, Jobe is below, pretty comfortably below. And then Boz might be right there with him. Those are my favorites. I mean, Rasmussen is by far my favorite. You know, if you're just,
we're not going to talk about Rasmussen. We're not going to talk about Paddock anymore.
Right. They define the top and the bottom of this list in both ways.
And I do want to say about McGill, it's more about me. Just, I think about this a lot. Sometimes I just want to talk about pitchers just on a spectrum of probabilities. And I think with McGill at his 95th percentile performance is better than Boz, absolutely. I don't think that's real, but let's say it's 75th percentile. I think that's the highest percentage of outcome, like 80% or something like that. I know this is like how we do weights and how we do rankings is just
right. That
there's this two spectrums that you're trying to smash together of likelihood and ceiling versus floor. So that's kind of why I was saying it like that. But so like where I see him right now is McGill, you've shown something you've never shown before, and it was just so good that there is a higher chance of it actually sticking than usual. But because there's still that skepticism, I have Boz ahead of him, but it's still like if he continues.
We've seen more out of McGill, so it's like he has a little bit more inertia to overcome.
We
have a bunch of innings from McGill where he's been like, okay. Now Boz, we're just like, we've only really had hype and injury.
You mentioned Jackson Jobin there, and I actually saw him, you know, I watched his game, of course, Monday night with everybody on the stream. It was really fun for a moment. And I regret ranking Jackson Jobe as high as I did, because I see a guy that is not in tune with his arsenal enough and is still trying to figure out, how do I use velocity? How do I use my breaking stuff and my cutter well? And he has, when I think I'm going to lean into this, I don't know. I call it donut command, which is either you are outside the zone or you're in the middle of the zone. Like you are not nibbling properly, not going to quadrants around the zone. You are either like, okay, it's way too high, or it's spiked, or like now here's a cutter down the middle. And
I see some of the heat maps. The cutter has a middle heat map, and the four seam does too.
And it's just like, oh, like no, there's that's a low confidence picture of where it's going. It's like, I have to throw a strike, so I'm just going to throw here now. Okay, I'm trying to nibble, and oh, way too far out because I have to be perfect with it. We see this a lot from guys, and it's hard to transition from that into really coming into terms with what you have and wielding it properly and, you know, utilizing that cutter properly. And then you set up the four seamer here and the changeup there and the curveball there. The stuff is so good. But when I think about, all right, week to week, start to start, how confident do I feel in this being a productive outing? I'm not there yet with Jobe. And I'm still starting him against the White Sox because it's the White Sox, but I wish I didn't rank him inside my top 50. I wish I kind of had him around 60. That's where I'm at the moment. Where are you?
I had him around 70 going in just because of very different risks that he didn't even make the opening rotation, and, you know, risks that he gets sent down and risks that he doesn't put it together. And just generally, I'm a little bit more careful because of the things that I was talking about with Max Meyer and so, which is that I think it takes a while to discover your identity in the major leagues as a starting pitcher, and it doesn't always come right away, because by all accounts, he should just come in and dominate with the, at least according to Stuff Plus, with the pitches he has. But I did look under the hood a little bit, and some of the expected swing rates on his pitches, because our new Stuff Plus creates kind of expected swing rates, are pretty low.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the curve is not going to get swings, and the change is not going to get swings according to Stuff Plus. And so if you're not going to get swings on those pitches, my solution for Jobe is a little bit weird. It's kind of old school, and it may not work. I understand there's some risk, and I understand why he's not doing it. But my solution for him is to throw the four seam more. It's almost nobody does that anymore, but for him, he has one of the best four seams in the big leagues, according to Stuff Plus.
And, really?
Yeah. And according to watching him, like, I think it's a pretty good four seam. He throws it 38% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the sinker's not very good. I don't think the change is as good as he thinks it is. And the curve's not going to get you any swinging strikes. So I think he should become almost like 50-50 fastball cutter.
Oh, interesting.
And he should play the curveball for called strikes.
Yes, I very much agree with that one.
And so I think he should almost be like, you know, 45-45, you know, 5% curveballs, 5% changeups.
Mm-hmm. So,
I think that could solve some of his command issues because now he's throwing the four seam a lot. So he's going to hopefully get into a rhythm and start hitting the spots. Because if you look at the heat map, there are some four seams that are along the edges of the zone.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah. Yes. This is interesting. So
he just got into a rhythm and threw more of them.
Now, I want to hear a little bit more about the reasoning for this, because what I thought might be an interesting solution is the reverse, where he actually, because guys aren't swinging at his pitches as much, great. Stop trying to get them to swing at it. Be aggressive in them. Make them go for it. Make them actually want to swing and throw enough strikes with it. Just like literally just say, I just need to get this in the zone.
So more down the middle, but more
pitch backward.
Like all of his pitches.
Like save pitch all the four-seamer and surprise them with it, because the curveball, I think, is just stupid unhittable. It's just such good movement.
But they see it, I think, or something. They don't swing at it.
Well, right. They don't swing at it because they just see it and they go, cool, it's going to be a ball. But if they don't swing at it, it's a called strike, then that's a different thing, right?
So, like, you say ratchet up the curveball so that he's throwing more in the zone.
I'd say
like
be more aggressive cutter, with zone rates forcing. With the curveball and the cutter, and just kind of lean in on this. And then either you surprise way, with the four-seamer, because they're going to be out of their shoes ready to swing for a four-seamer, and then they'll swing at anything with it, you know?
Yeah, that's another way. And either way, I think this White Sox start could allow him to both experiment and maybe dominate in a way that can help his command going forward, because command is at least, you know, half confidence.
Right.
So if he can just go out and dominate the White Sox, then maybe he's like, just, I'm maybe more in the zone. My stuff is on.
That's the thing.
Sox couldn't hit it, you know?
I think that's the thing that we were saying is like, whether it's extreme four seamer or extreme secondary, it just needs to be confident in the zone. Don't try and be the perfect best element or best version of yourself right now. Just be the 4% walk rate version, you know, like literally just center of the glove. You know, you're not the chaotic guy. You're not a Joe Boyle. So then just do center of the glove and whatever, just keep throwing it in there and it's fine. Play quadrant ball if you can. Don't play 9 quadrant ball. Play like just the
you aren't Kirby, obviously.
Yeah, but, right. Even though Kirby's got to change some things too when he's healthy about the slide of locations, but hey, whatever. Yeah. It still bothers me to this day.
The interesting thing for me about Job is that he's in very different buckets depending on when we were talking about the sort of dynasty aspect versus the what are you doing for me lately. I think he's in very different buckets there. Like when we're looking at upside alone and future, I have him there with Boz and McGill at the top. But if we're talking about what are you going to do for me in my next start, like, yes, I'm starting him against the White Sox. But it's a little bit more depending on how that goes. I'll talk to you about the next start, you know?
And I'm with you there. We only have a couple guys left, and I definitely want to hit on Jordan Hicks, who kept the 97 plus velocity from his final two spring starts, showcased 98 against the Astros. As a San Francisco guy, I hope you saw this one, because it was so nice to see him go arm side and glove side location with his sinker. And Jordan Hicks last year had 0 games as a starter where he had a 70% strike rate with his sweeper. It was over 75% in this start against the Astros. It was a very right-handed heavy lineup. We haven't really seen him try to use a splitter against lefties a ton. So there's that. His velocity also was 98 in the first start last year. Then it slowly came down 97, maybe 96, and so on and so forth. But Where are you on Jordan Hicks right now? Because I see, I personally see a guy who's just got his sinker back and hopefully has more strikes from his secondaries, making him a very good, reliable, quality start arm in Giants town.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably right behind Rasmussen in the, you know, what are you doing for me this year kind of aspect. I will just say that, you know, he looked great for 3 months last year. And I would just monitor that velocity. I mean, maybe he can't go further. He did work on his body. He did work on what he wants to go deeper into the season. And to the credit of the Giants, even though they had Birdsong breaking out in spring and Landon Rupp and like had lots of options, and people were like, you know, Hicks is not pitching that well this spring. Like, why don't you just move Hicks into the bullpen? People like me.
Yeah, we said that. And then all of a sudden he threw 97. I said, I'm sorry, guys, I'm wrong.
Yeah, right. So I think maybe he might eventually go back into the bullpen again. Maybe he's just a 3 month starter again. But don't forget how good those 3 months were last year. And also don't forget that the easiest way, I think, to decide about what you want to do with him in the future is to watch his velo. It's boring and you don't want to be that reductive, but it's easy. It's easy. Yep. If he comes out in a start, even if he has a good start and he's more 95, then you start to be a little bit more like, who's he starting against next?
Right. Exactly. And easiest way to do that, of course, is just read the SP roundup in the morning. I got you guys. Okay. Just come on by. Just come on to pitchables.com. Read my daily pitching article. We have Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker. And Kumar Rocker, I think we can both agree, probably has one more start or two starts before Patrick Corbin arrives. To me, I feel like he goes to the pen or goes back to the minors. Long story short, dynasty is one thing. I think Kumar Rocker will be valuable in some fashion for the Rangers. But as of right now, 12 teamers are trying to see like who should you hold on to. You don't need to hold on to Kumar Rocker. I think we're on the same page there, just for the sake of time.
I think that the shapes that he has are just really difficult against left-handers.
Yeah.
And we saw
you corrected me on that one in the offseason. I was like, oh boy, yep, I got that wrong. Bad against lefties.
Well, we saw last year that his plan against lefties was to walk them, basically.
Another pitcher did that too last year, and it was pretty funny. I think it was like Ronel Blanco or something like that. But Jack Leiter, who has a new nickname. Do you know his nickname? Did I tell you this?
No.
His nickname, courtesy of Rated Rookies, I like to call Rate Drookies, is Jack Zippo. Because the Zippo, the fastball, and Zippo Leiter, and it's so good. He put that inside of Chaz. Like, did you just make that up? He goes, yeah. I was like, I'm stealing this. This is great.
He was great today in Zippo. Cincinnati, where, you know, against that lineup can be not great on the road or whatever, but in Cincinnati, that lineup is pretty good.
Yeah.
And he had no walks today.
Slider, 77% strike rate. Slider. Yeah,
He's throwing the kick change, the four seam, the sinker, and the slider. And the four seam and the slider are his identity. He has an identity. The question has always been, you know, what happens when he's walking people and he gets rattled. So he's just, I think, what did you, you had a name for
loss?
Yeah.
Headache inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster.
Yeah. He has those tendencies.
Yes.
But he is near the top of my dynasty rankings.
Yeah.
And as long as he's not walking guys, I'm in. I know that he could just walk four in his next start, but
I know
I have lots of shares of Jack Leiter, and I'm just going to try and be careful with him. I wonder if you could look at teams that don't swing that much and not start him against teams that don't swing that much. There are teams that just swing less, you know?
Yeah.
So don't start him against the Dodgers seems like a really obvious thing to say, but like, don't start him against the Dodgers. Don't start him against teams that don't swing, and you might be able to really profit with him.
Yeah. I mean, I loved that first start from Leiter to see also that Jack Zippo is getting the slider actually working. Because when it comes to a stuff four seamer, at least in our model, my fan four plus model, that is the elements that makes a four seamer, from velocity to extension to vert and to attack angle. Like, Jack Leiter is like top five in that combined in the league. And to see him have such little success last year, despite that fastball, really meant that, hey, either you were tipping last year or the other pitches needed to be better with strikes. And to see the changeup and the sinker get involved as well, I think has just really transformed him a bit. And it's more about, it's really the 6 week plan is what I'm going to call it. Of you see a guy like this, you just got to give him runway for 6 weeks to get used to the league and get his footing. He's going to have a bad start, and he's usually, you know, he's going to come out of that adversity in some way. And when he does, when he has that good start after the bad one, then you will know that Jack Zibbo is here to stay and you should have him everywhere. At least that's how I feel about him. And I would have him pretty high up, relatively.
Would you have him ahead of Holmes and Meyer?
Yeah, I kind of want to at this point.
Definitely on the dynasty list, he's yes. like third or fourth. Like he's
it's definitely... really tough because it's just about weighing what you need. But I see the slot, the ceiling being higher with Jack Zibbo.
In this
and
group,
you need something safer. You go with the other guys.
In this group, he has the third best fastball after Tyler McGill and Drew Rasmussen. Mm. But there is one player we haven't
two.
Talked about yet that we need to.
There are two, there's one or three, and we're going to talk about well, those three after this break. All right, you. You did a drive-by of Chris Bubich, and I cannot believe that I didn't jump out of my seat. All right? Because you're doing him a disservice. Watching that game against the Brewers, we saw a 92-93 mile-per-hour four-seamer that was a little bit down from his reliever days, but it was pretty dominant against them.
Just a fastball slider guy. That's all
he's not. No, don't you dare say that.
I think
because the changeup was higher than we have seen, but we have also seen that changeup dominate right-handers. And I think from Bubich, yes, I am worried that the command of that changeup and slider was not at his best, especially lefties getting the slider. Actually, I think there's a sweeper in there too. Wasn't exciting enough, but he did get a better changeup as the game went on. The fastball is a good foundation. And I'm not saying that Bubich is as good as the potential of Jack Leiter. I'm not saying put him into the Shane Boz realm, but he is not in the same bucket as Casey Mize to me. He's not in the same bucket as AJ Smith-Shawver. I think he's right there with Max Meyer, essentially, at this point.
I think he's Brady Singer.
Oh, no.
From the left.
Also, Brady Singer is doing something really cool with throwing more four-seamers, and it's making him much better, and I'm actually, for the and first I've, time ever, I, in on Brady
I've been
Singer.
Wrong about Brady Singer, and I've been wrong about... I think, you know, he does give me a little bit of, like, sort of... And it's not exact... I'm not talking about, like, pitch comps here. I'm just talking about sort of... players I miss on, like this Michael Wacha, like like he's like refined, he's got good enough command, he's got good enough pitches, he'll make it work. But
you make him sound so boring with the tone of his voice. Okay, you're like, I know. He's fine. How dare you?
I don't
no, I, look,
he throws 92.5,
but he's mostly fastball slider and he locates it upstairs. Like, didn't you like Cody Bradford? Imagine better Cody Bradford. That's Bubich.
Hmm.
Aha, I got him with his own guy.
Well, Bradford's a righty with a breaking ball.
No, he's not. Cody Bradford's a lefty.
Oh, okay. But it's a breaking ball.
He's an extension
ball, right?
90 mile per hour four seamer with a changeup underneath.
I thought it was a curveball.
Changeup for Bradford.
All right. Well, then I got Bradford all mixed
up. All right, hold on. Who's the right hander with a curveball?
No. But, okay, so Cody Bradford does sit 90, right?
Right, 90-91, okay. Yeah.
All right.
So he's a better version of Bradford is what I'm saying all Bubich right. is. Because Bubich has a slider and a changeup. And I think that also you have a winning ball club too with the Royals, at least you're generally better than the Marlins.
Or the I did watch it, but I was just like, why aren't you guys hitting it?
Right. And I think it's because he is like yelling at the hitters. And there's something to be said about sometimes of like watching these. Like Bowden Francis makes no sense to me and he never will. And I just refuse. I'll go to bait instead.
That's how I feel about Bubich, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, right. I still have been waiting for someone to sit down with me and say, this is why Bowden Francis's fastball is as effective as it is, and you should believe in it. I've said this on podcasts many times. Not one person has approached me. So I'm waiting, guys. Please, somebody tell me. Bubich, I think, is also being a lefty and having a changeup that works is really important. And I think Bubich is better at this than...
Oh, wow. We have Bowden Francis fastball above average by Stuff Plus.
Because I think it had 17 inches of vert, but it's at 92. It's not a good attack angle, not a good extension. Dude.
19 inches of IBV.
Oh, now it's 19.
Yeah.
Is this it? Is this the answer?
That's
I mean, there's nothing else, though. The splitter's not great.
It's 92. It's a 92 mile an hour fastball with 19 inches of vert. That's the answer.
Is that it?
And it also has to do with his arm angle. He has a 40 degree arm angle, which does not scream 19 inches of vert.
So would you say it's like a 3/4?
Yeah. Pavetta's okay. Higher than that.
Oh, wait, Pavetta is like a 52 or something, isn't he?
Right. And so Pavetta's 19 inches of IV is more anticipated.
Yeah, so right.
Bowden looks like he's going to throw you a dead zone fastball, and then instead you get 19 inches of vert.
So that's it. So we're in on Bowden Francis because of this fastball doing that.
I mean, that's part of why I was in on Schwellenbach when he first got in, was like, oh, his arm angle is that and his IVB is that? Oh,
Schwellenbach for me was that he had 6 pitches, and it's like...
Well, that's also good. But anyway, like
he's so good.
I'm just going to broadcast this. I'm wrong on Chris Bubich. But I'm going to sometimes you get into a position where you're just like, I don't care.
You might not be wrong about Chris Bubich. I will make that very
my
clear.
My feel is not good. I don't know.
Very clear that I'm not saying that Bubich is great and you're wrong. I'm saying, I think there's more in that changeup and slider. Francis is one that we're like, I'll be wrong. Framber Valdez is the one also that I'm just like, I'm just going to be wrong on him. It's fine forever. I want to continue to Fitz and Heather and Dustin May. Those are our last two guys.
Yes, May we got to talk about.
And we'll save that one. Richard Fitz, were you impressed at all by what you saw in the first start?
I mean, the thing is that, like, I thought he was supposed to have, he did have better view though than I expected. And, you know, when he was coming over from the Yankees, I thought, okay, this is a bad fastball, but good breaking balls. And that's my first look at him. And last year that's why, that's what he's got. And then the fastball this year is 95.7 from Fitz, which is a little bit more exciting, but Stuff Plus still says, you know, good breaking ball, bad fastball. So I don't think he has the ceiling that some other people think he has.
Yeah.
I think
so.
He's almost
I'm
in
with
like
you.
The Cooper Criswell bucket. I know he throws 95 and Criswell throws 90, but he's just a guy for me.
Oh, man. So we saw a lot of, we saw some data from the spring that was suggesting, hey, this is like a 17, 18 inch vert with 96, 97 with a really good filthy slider. And then we saw this game against the Rangers where it was 14.5 inches of vert. And 95. And I go, that's not it. What's interesting is that the Grom's fastball also was down 2.5 inches in vert. Mm. And I wonder if there's some calibration thing. And I'm holding off a little bit on Fitz just for that reason.
That is weird because even last year, when I thought it was kind of dead zone, it was 17 inches of vert.
Right.
So
it was strange. And the extension was lower too, though. In the last game in the Mexican league, that tune-up, it was 7.2 inches of extension. That was 6.5 in this Rangers one. And I'm like, that 7.2 was wrong. There's no way.
Was that like a whole Hawkeye that they have there or not?
I have no idea, but yeah, there's no way that I'm just going to say that one was wrong. Maybe not. Maybe the whole calibration stuff is wrong with Fitz there. So I'm going to like hold out one more start. It's against the Cardinals. I believe on Thursday.
He could be like a Clark Schmidt kind of guy, right? Like because he's got the good sweeper. Maybe
well,
he pushes the four seam.
He has a lot of offerings now with the Red Sox. Yeah. And there is, you know, he has good breaking stuff, and that four seamer acts like it did in the spring. Then I get actually excited because then you have extension, you have vert, you have velocity. Like that can very much work, and it's not the thing, it's just one of many.
Right.
That would make me excited. But right now I'm like, what is this data? You know, like that's me talking to my Android on my spaceship. What is this?
What are you showing me?
Data? And like, I'm just an Android. I just want to know what we're going to get. So I'm holding out a little bit for that, but Dustin May. Oh,
okay. Here's the weird thing about Dustin May.
Yeah. The forcing was so cool. Sorry. Keep going.
Well, this is the thing. Like Dustin May always has had a lower arm slot. So he's always had like a 30 degree ish arm slot. And, so that's why when you watch Dustin May, everything kind of goes sideways. He, like the main thing is the sort of sinker and the curve sweeperish curve, like very sidewaysy curve. So he's banana peeling sideways, you know, with his pitches. And that made a lot of sense for his arm angle. And his four seam was like decent above that, in that it was high velo. Like he's ginger guard. He's always had like the high velo.
Are you still calling him that, huh? Because I mean, you don't want to be compared to Syndergaard anymore. Yeah.
But something changed his arm angle. So he went from a 30 degree arm angle and 16 inches of vertical break on the four seam, which was a 97 mile an hour fastball, which is across the board like really good,
right?
Because you don't normally get 16 inches of vertical break from a sidearmy 30.
But it's not even that too, because if he throws it upstairs, it's flat. Right.
Because it's coming. It's there's a coming
such a low angle
slot. Yeah, but now he's 19 degree arm angle, so he's even lower down.
Yeah,
and he's gone from 97 to 95. So those two things would be alarm bells if they happened to me in season. Like, obviously, if he started out the season 97 and all of a sudden he's 95 and he's dropped 10 degrees in his arm angle, I'd be like, oh, that dude is hurt.
That guy's hurt. Yeah, right. Yep.
But he's starting out the season that way. This could just be the healthy version. This is my slot now. But I also have, I'm like, okay, now he's 12 inches of vertical break from an even lower spot. I think it still works. I think he's an interesting guy where it's four seam sinker sweeper, and that's his deal.
Yeah, I dig it.
Like enough, but each of the pitches is very good.
Yeah, the sinker is still getting ride and messing guys up. It's still so hard to hit, I think, against right handers. And it's a sweeper, as you mentioned. It's not a curve. I will go to my grave telling everybody it's the same grip. It's just he's throwing it here as opposed to here. Curves and sweepers are the same pitch. Yeah. I don't care what you say. It's just where you release it. Fine. No, I'm just messing around. But Rich Hill threw a sweeper, not a curve, I guess, by our standards. Just kind of get that in out of the way. I think that Dustin May finally embracing that I'm going to save this four-seamer and actually throw it upstairs to utilize it. He's not a common Dodgers thing, and I'm just so happy to see that. That is how he's used it, and he's gotten whiffs on the pitch already. And there's a really good slow motion shot against Ozzy Albies, where you can see how flat the pitch is coming into the glove, and Albies's bat is like this, and he misses it. But if that's steeper, he probably hits the bat there. And I think over time we start to see that cutter. Right, this was a 5-inning game, about 80 pitches. Just want to get the first one out of the way. Don't try to do anything new. Blah blah blah. I think we're going to see, by the way, I really hope his wife was named April. That would be the funniest thing in the world to me. But, we're talking about this on the broadcast. Miss April May was there. And
well, he's not Dustin May as well.
Oh, man.
Boo that man.
Yeah, I liked it. I'm here for it. I'm going to encourage it every time. Steris.
Stole that from somebody. But I just wonder, at the 19 degree arm angle, I'm going to see if I can do this.
Well, I just want to mention that by the time his eponymous month arrives, I think you're going to see 90 pitches from him. And also, we haven't seen this runway of health for him, just like kind of with Nick Lodolo, where I'm excited to see how they play this out. Like, how do they look when they get comfortable and they have this baseline that they can then improve upon? Because you will see the cutter eventually against left-handers. I mean, that's the game plan. You might be seeing a changeup at that same arm angle that would just naturally be good from it. So what you saw on Tuesday night from Dustin May is likely not what we see moving forward from him. And I'm excited about that. I think this is a great team to be on. I think the Dodgers are going to just air him out because he's not in their playoff picture. They don't care. They'll shut him down in September. Sure, they have six starters by then, you know? That's fine. They're just going to get all the innings right now and use them as that temporary piece before the playoffs. So I'm a huge fan of this with Dustin May. I have him above Grant Holmes and Max Meyer. I actually it's right around the Boz. And part of me wants to say that I have more faith in Dustin May consistently through the year than I do Shane Boz.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. This arm angle thing is just weird for me. I'm going to have to do some more digging on this. I mean, Skeens also dropped arm angle. And there's a fair amount of guys dropping arm angles. And so now Dustin May's arm angle is virtually identical to Paul Skeens and Aaron Nola. And I don't know what to do with that because he doesn't seem like either of those guys.
No. I mean, the curve maybe, is kind of, it's not, no, it's not a knuckle curve. He doesn't get on top of the curve like
Nola. Yeah, Nola has unexpected up-down movement.
Yeah, he has two plane that's just, no one expects that, right? Yeah. As you said, yeah. Maybe
he has some things in common with Skeens, but he doesn't have the velo in common with Skeens anymore.
Right. We'll see what happens there. We're going late.
Oh, he's Tanner Houck.
Don't do that.
Without the splitter.
Don't do that.
See, I'm not as sure about Dustin May. I have him lower than you.
I understand that one. I would say with Tanner Houck, they also use it differently. And Tanner Houck's like, cool, my slider, which by the way is down 5 inches in horizontal movement. It's really terrifying. And the splitter was not consistent. And it's just like Tanner Houck just looks really bad right now.
Oh no.
And I'm moving on completely. Wow. From him and like 12 teamers. I'm just like, nope, I don't want to do this.
I didn't have any shares, so I didn't actually check.
Yeah. But that's a terrifying thing. He's actually a perfect example. Like him and Walker Buehler, I'm just like, nope, gone. Bye-bye. Those are the kind of quick decisions that I think are important to make early when it's not a guy that you think is going to be like a top 30 player or something like that.
I think so. When you're dealing with a stadium that's as difficult as Fenway, you've got to make that decision quickly because, you know, if you're with Max Meyer and he has a bad start on the road to start and you're like, well, the next start's in Miami, then at least you have that like warm blanket to cuddle.
Yeah, that's a great point too.
Nobody wants to cuddle up with Fenway.
Yeah. But I hear what you're saying about just like extreme slider, extreme sweeper from that angle. Absolutely.
Than Houck has.
Right. And he utilizes it well. Right. And I think that you're going to see the cutter return that Houck doesn't have as the season goes on, better team context as well, as you're saying too.
That's right. Yeah.
So that is where I'm citing there, but you know, I think that's going to do for this one. I hope to see you on playback.tv/pitchlist randomly. Just be like, I'm watching this game. Whatever. Just see what they're doing.
I just need like this much free time.
I know. I know. You have all the free time. You don't have like 30 million things that you do. What are you talking
both
about?
Of my kids are in Little League. So there's not only just.
And you're coaching, right?
The regular baseball that I see. Yeah. I mean, I don't officially coach because of my regular schedule. It doesn't really allow.
Sure, I get that.
But I am their unofficial coach.
Oh man, I used to actually coach 6-year-olds for a second, like my friend's little brother, and his dad came up with this funny thing of like, how do you teach kids how to play baseball? Which I'm sure you guys know, but it's like you have the alligator that's to do a ground ball. You know, the alligator comes down, right? But the best one was the horsey, and the horsey is where you turn your body completely perpendicular, so your shoulders are facing the target. You stick out both your arms, and then you gallop like a horse, and then you step towards it. You know, that's how we taught like 5-6-year-olds how to throw a baseball, and it kind of worked.
I did like long toss, like your
crow hops and stuff. You just do the horsey.
I did long toss with my 10-year-old the other day, and he actually ate up about like 10 feet of the long toss by doing the horsey.
Yes.
And I was like, that doesn't count. You didn't throw it the full way.
Yeah, right. You're just like, nope, close, nope, no.
He's like, here I am, coming closer, coming closer.
But honestly, that's way better, especially in that little league of like, yeah, throw it closer, kids.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to give him some arm strength. He's so my youngest is starting, and we're just fastball command and arm strength. That's all we're doing.
Yep.
My oldest is now about to turn 13, so I hope you don't get mad at me. But the main thing that I'm trying to do with him is breaking ball command.
Wow, I threw a curveball at 12.
Okay, yeah, he's 12. So
yeah,
good.
I threw an
but he great. Throws a wicked curveball. And so what I've been and his he doesn't have he's not as large as the players. He's in juniors, which is like past Little League. Mm-hmm. He's not as large as some of his players he's playing. He doesn't throw necessarily as fast. And so I told him, if you could throw your curveball for strikes, it doesn't matter how big your fastball is. You could go 50-50. And they wouldn't know it was coming from, you know, because his curveball is that good. It's really good.
How does he throw it?
Huh?
Do you know how he throws it? I used to throw my like brighter, but over the top. And it would
AJ Burnett knuckle curve.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I didn't know little AJ bit Burnett of knuckle curve back then. So little he's bit lucky of to have
Clark
you in the
Schmidt. Look, a little bit of Clark Schmidt coaching. So a little bit of Clark Schmidt plus AJ Burnett. They're both knuckle curve guys. So
yeah.
And because Clark Schmidt talked a little bit about like the seatbelt.
Well, but, oh, you're right. The seatbelt, I did it as a karate chop. You leave with your pinky to karate chop down to your left ankle as far as you can. And that's how that was my second curve belt, is even better than my first one.
Every good pitch has cues in flight of different directions.
Yeah.
And so for him, the cue for getting movement is the karate chop. Mm-hmm. But we've been going away a little bit towards the AJ Burnett curve cue, which is throw it hard.
Yeah.
Because what I need him to do is to get it across the plate. He has movement on all of his curveballs. Mm-hmm. And so I want him to sort of develop a curveball for strikes and a curveball with two strikes, because he has a big one and his little one, the more little one. And I want the little one for strikes. I want him to throw, like, just throw that thing hard towards the zone. It's going to have more movement, you know?
Oh man. And
it turns out he's got a little bit of a lower slot. So we're moving a little bit from the four seam to the sinker.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cool. That sounds great. I wish I had all this stuff in my ear back then. You want to know what I got? When I was 12, I played like in the summer, like the travel league that was like 13, 14, and I should not have been pitching against these guys. I went to puberty at 16, guys. Okay.
So yeah, that's where my son is headed. Me too.
So my dad, I would literally have these games that were just like me just getting innings, and that we would lose like 13-0. Guys would hit home runs off me who are way better than me and everything. And my dad after the game would say, like, son, their kids were in the bleachers. And I'm like, okay, dad. Like the guys who hit home runs off of me is like, oh, I think I saw their kids in the bleachers. I was like, okay, thanks, dad. Yeah. That's what I had in my ear, you know?
Like, well, I try not to tell him that because it's really obvious. I mean, he's up there and the guy on the mound is 6 foot and he's like not even 5 foot yet.
My God. Oh man. Well, love to hear this. Good luck coaching, obviously. And that sounds so fun. I can't wait to do that eventually myself, get back into it after travel coaching like 10 years ago, I guess it was. But then I had this thing called Pitcherless. It took too much time. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, huge thanks to Eno Saris. Oh my gosh. Tell me this time if I do it wrong. Maybe. Huge thanks to Eno Saris for joining me this week. And definitely go check out that Kick Change article on The Athletic. Looking forward to that. So you can join me and the Pitcherless community anytime baseball is on, including right now at Pitcherless. At playback.tv/Pitcherless. Seriously, we're just watching all the games. It's amazing. Come join us for free. But that is it for today. So thank you, Unisaurus. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.